Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. I am your host, Matt Tardio. Today's episode is being sponsored by Upwork. We're going to be talking about Tucker Carlson and why his name appears on FARA paperwork. That'd be the Foreign Agents Registry Act here in the United States of America. Yeah, that's right. You heard me correct. He is on FARA paperwork. And I'm going to show that to you guys here in just a little bit, along with why he's there and what exactly that means. Whew, man, that's going to be interesting. You guys are not going to want to miss this one. Then after that, we're going to get into some Middle East updates and everything that's going on over there inside of the Middle East. It looks like Israel is actually about to ride on Gaza City. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is going to spark some serious outrage. And we're already seeing it over here in the United States. And I've shown you guys plenty of terror attacks that have been taking place in the recent past. As a matter of fact, just I believe it was like yesterday, some kid over in Washington went to go conduct like another school shooting. Not a lot of information ended up coming out of that because that individual happens to be a minor, but the video of the knife attack over inside of North Carolina has been released, all sorts of stuff. But all of that's going out. Tucker, you got some splaining to do. Oh man, look at you guys in there. Hey, listen, before we get into all that, I just, you know, if you guys ever like try to figure out when is the right time, I guess, to start upscaling your business. You know what I mean? Like if you own a business, you know, you end up wearing a lot of different hats and it requires a lot of expertise all the time at the exact right time. And for that reason alone, ladies and gentlemen, just for doing that, when you finally reach that point, you guys really need to consider, am I doing too much? Is it costing me too much to sit here and concentrate on all of these things on my own? Well, good news. You guys can actually outsource some of this stuff up over on Upwork. And with over two decades of experience with a simple and ambitious goal to pioneer a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and to find more flexibility in the way they staff key projects and initiatives by assessing a global marketplace filled with the top talent in IT, web dev, AI, design, admin support, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy with no cost to join. You can register, browse freelance profiles, get help drafting job posts, or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them to take your business to the next level. Upwork makes the entire process easier, simpler, and more affordable with industry low fees. Post a job today and hire tomorrow with Upwork. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you guys are motivated and ready to get into all the freaking goodness for tonight. Before we even do it, we're going to let a couple more people get in here. And I think it's about time to let you guys know that we did just move a bunch of F-35s. Woo, that's a loud freaking noise. We did just move a bunch of F-35s all the way down to the south over by Venezuela. Why did we do that? Well, because just a couple days ago, Venezuela decided it would be a very good idea to fly F-16s in a very low pass, like very, very close proximity to U.S. warships that are operating over there inside international waters. We didn't like that very much, so we ended up sending F-35s over there. But that's not the only thing that the United States government decided to do before that. As a matter of fact, we also decided to send U.S. Marines. You guys know how I told you we have 2,000 U.S. Marines down there? We actually have them down there on, how do I want to say this? Conducting amphibious landings on beachheads nearby Venezuela.
Tonight is ordering a squadron of a dozen stealth fighter jets to the Caribbean to conduct operations against drug cartels. Of course, this all comes as Venezuela sends a message to the Trump administration, too. Lucas Tomlinson is at the White House tonight for us. Good evening to you, Lucas.
Good evening, Aisha. The White House has approved the deployment of 10 F-35 stealth fighter jets to Puerto Rico after a pair of Venezuelan F-16 jets buzzed an American guided missile destroyer in the Caribbean. President Trump sent the following warning to Venezuela moments ago.
If they do put us in a dangerous position, they'll be shut down.
The Pentagon called the flyover of armed Venezuelan F-16s over the USS Jason Dunham highly provocative. The flyover took place 2 days after U.S. forces launched a strike on a Venezuelan drug boat in the Caribbean. President Trump said all 11 members of the Tren de Aragua gang on board were killed. The State Department declared the group a foreign terrorist organization in February. A Republican member of the Senate Armed Services Committee called the strike justified.
The boat had been warned to stop. They chose not to. They were running, clearly running drugs. We had been tracking it since it left Venezuela.
Many Democrats called the strike a violation of international law.
They think they can get away with this. God knows what they are going to do next. So that's what we're looking to.
Oh, Nancy Pelosi, the frickin' beacon of free frickin' thinking. The beacon of free thinking. Oh, my God. She is worried about illegal activities. I guess we shouldn't worry about her husband's stock dealings at all. Oh, my goodness, dude. That's frickin' nuts. Anyways, yeah, no, it's not frickin' crazy for us to be doing that stuff. Yes, they are horrible. And I believe it was, yeah, it was J.D. Vance. Who was it that sent this to me? It was Nate Vance ended up sending this over to me earlier today, and I about died laughing. Or maybe he didn't send it. Maybe I just saw it, dude. I don't know. Either way, I about freaking died laughing. Brian Krasnison ended up tweeting out, after J.D. said, killing cartel members who poison our fellow citizens is the highest and best use of our military. Brian Krasnison ended up coming in saying, killing the civilians of another nation who are civilians without any due process is called a war crime. Problem is, they're now terrorists. J.D. Vance says, I don't give a shit what you call it. Oh, dude. Oh, I about died laughing when I ended up seeing that. Holy freaking crap, man. So good on JD for knocking that one out. You got to freaking love him. This, though, ladies and gentlemen, this we got to talk about. You guys all remember this, don't you?
How many people live in Iran, by the way?
I don't know the population. At all?
No, I don't know the population.
You don't know the population of the country you seek to topple?
How many people live in Iran?
92 million.
Okay. Yeah.
How could you not know that?
I don't sit around memorizing population tables.
Well, it's kind of relevant because you're calling for the overthrow of the government.
Why is it relevant whether it's 90 million or 80 million or 100 million? Why is that relevant?
Because if you don't know anything about the country...
I didn't say I don't know anything about
the country. Okay, what's the ethnic mix of Iran?
They are Persians and predominantly Shia. Okay,
it's not even... You don't know anything about Iran. So,
okay,
actually,
I am not the Tucker Carlson expert on Iran.
You're a senator who's calling for the overthrow of the government.
You're the one who
claims you don't know anything about the country.
No, you don't know anything about the country. You're the one who claims they're not trying to murder Donald Trump.
I'm not saying that.
Who can't figure out if it was a good idea to kill General Soleimani, and you said it was bad.
You don't believe they're trying to murder Trump.
Yes, I do.
Because you're not calling for military strikes against them in retaliation. And if you really believe that.
We're carrying out military strikes today.
You said Israel was.
Right, with our help. Israel is leading them, but we're supporting them.
Well, you're breaking news here because the U.S. government last night denied, the National Security Council spokesman Alex Pfeiffer denied on behalf of Trump that we were acting on Israel's behalf in any offensive capacity.
No, we're not bombing them. Israel's bombing them.
You just said we were.
We are supporting Israel.
This is high stakes. You're a senator. If you're
really, dude? Really? Yeah. Well, good news. Paperwork actually exists on all this. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you guys are aware of FARA. Some people do, some people don't. It's the Foreign Agent Registry Act. Now, when I put this up on your screen, I want to let you guys know that this is the paperwork. I'm gonna zoom in on it for you right here. All right. Here we have name of registrant, Luminate Advisors LLC. All right, so there's Luminate right up over here. This is who they are. And why all of this ended up coming up is because they were hired by Qatar. And what did they get hired by Qatar to do? Well, that's a very good question. What would cause them to end up like making it up over here on FARA, right? And it's the answer is like right here on line 12. During this 6 month period, this 6 month reporting period has a registrant on behalf of any foreign principal engaged in political activity as defined below. If yes, identify each foreign principal and describe in full detail all such political activity, indicating, among other things, the relations, interests, or policies sought to be influenced and the means employed to achieve this purpose. If the registrant arranged, sponsored, or delivered speeches, lectures, or social media, blah, 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 internet postings, etc. It's up on your guys' screen. You guys can read that. But right down here at the bottom, as you guys can see, foreign principal, embassy of the state of Qatar, date February 26, 2025, contact Tucker Carlson, the Tucker Carlson show method in person. Purpose, interview with Prime Minister of Qatar regarding war with Iran. The Prime Minister of Qatar is being attacked in the media for wanting to stop it. Now, very interesting enough, why would somebody have to register underneath FARA? And some of you guys may or may not know this. Maybe some of you don't, but it is definitely time that we end up talking about this. Registering on FARA is one of those things that takes place under agency relationships, right? And so obviously this is an agent of Qatar. This LLC was hired. It's like a public PR firm, if you will, that got hired to go out and find Tucker Carlson. Takes it a little bit step further, though, right here. Political or public influence activity, right? That person or entity engages in activities intended to influence U.S. public opinion, policy, or government officials on behalf of the foreign principal. Now, as far as it goes down to Tucker Carlson, when we go and we start looking at all of the different things that are out there, a couple different investigations have been done on this. Get out of here. Get out of here. A couple different investigations had been done on this. Conservative media targeted by Qatari of foreign influence operations. And when we go down and take a look, all right, what we are seeing is that Tucker Carlson's staff is 1,000% denying that they received any money from the Qatari government in general. But I believe the actual number is 180,000 that ended up making their way into that specific LLC that was just registered underneath that paperwork that talked about going over and talking to Carlson. Now, I think when we take it a step just a tad bit further, I'm going to have to go back here and I'm going to have to open up this video. And by the way, when we go over this article in itself, between January 1, 2024 and Election Day, just over 10% of communications sent by Qatari foreign agents to the media were directed to conservative outlets or commenters, according to the Washington Examiner review of the Department of Justice records. Since Republicans won control of the White House and Congress on Election Day, the proportion of messages sent by Qatari operatives to conservative outlets and commentators had surged to more than half of their total correspondence with the media. Redacted 01 coming and gifting out a hundo says Cruz made Christians look bad. I got a lot of verses for that fool, Brad in Louisiana. Man, yeah, I'm not a big fan of Ted Cruz personally. I'm just not. Trouble Actual, is there something wrong with Tube? It doesn't even give me option for Super Chat. I tried reaching for answers. Anybody got suggestions, dude? There's been a lot of people that have been reporting issues with Super Chats, but. I wish I could tell you, man. I really don't know what to tell you about all that. What I can tell you, let me go back over here and open this up. Ooh, I didn't put it on there. Let me go. What we're going to do is we're going to go over to that specific interview with Tucker Carlson, because I think it's important that you guys look at some of the titles that are on this video. Now, knowing that information, because knowledge is power, ladies and gentlemen, in my opinion. And I think it's important that you guys are kind of, I don't know, armed with it all. Watch. Yes, here we go. So we know the specific name of this video, right? And it's up here on the screen. All right. War with Iran, the Prime Minister of Qatar is being attacked. This is the exact one that you end up seeing on the paperwork. Let's go take a look at some of these chapter titles. How the Left Used the World Cup to Attack Qatar. Cultural Imperialism. Attacks on Nuclear Family Worldwide. Why Does Corporate Media Hate Qatar? Qatar's Hamas Office. Really interesting. We should probably listen to that clip. Is Qatar an enemy of the United States? Steve Witkoff. Qatar's relationship with Iran. How close is Iran to getting a nuclear weapon? Really interesting. I'd be very interested to hear that portion on here. Have the sanctions on Iran worked? Trump's efforts to end the Ukraine war. Advice to Trump on how to negotiate between Israel and Gaza. Really?
Then a successful ceasefire between Israel and Gaza. And who knows if that lasts. I mean, I don't know when this is going to air, so I don't even want to speculate. But clearly it's been awful for everybody. Certainly been awful for Gaza. It's been awful for its neighbors. I think it's been really bad for Israel. I mean, it's just kind of hard to see an upside. So how would you, if you were in charge, fix this, 80-year-old conflict for good?
it's going back to the basics, you know. If you look at the history since Madrid Declaration in the 90s, where Israel needed to be integrated in the region, economic normalization should happen between the countries in the region, and a political horizon for the Palestinians to establish their own state on the borders of 1967, which is according to the Security Council resolutions. Since that time until today, we didn't see anything, but the situation is going backward. More settlements, more violence, more policies which are destructive for the Palestinians, unfortunately. And basically, we are expecting from the Palestinians, you know, just to obey, to stay quiet, and not, you know, there will not never be anything instigated. This is normal, you know, when you have, you know, a situation that lasting that long, to have this kind of turbulence all the time. And I'm not talking here about 7th of October, I'm talking about the entire period. How many wars we had? We had a lot of them.
Why?
A lot of people, we hear them saying that we need to try something new. We need to try things that we are not even, you know, thinking about. Yes, we agree. The two-state solution. We've been talking about, we never tried this. Have we ever tried it and didn't work?
Very, very interesting. So here we have him pushing a two-state solution.
Does this country that's established next to Israel will be a threat for Israel?
Yes.
It's a threat as long as it's not a country.
That's false. That's very false information. It is absolutely going to be a threat as a country, because the radical ideology that embeds itself within that culture has nothing to do with them becoming a country and everything to do with taking over Israel. Who owns, like, where does Al Jazeera originate out of again? Everybody, like, please remind me where that comes from.
And we said that we are willing to provide security guarantees for Israel. We, all of us, we will be integrated together as one region and demilitarized Palestinian state. Even so, it's not even like, you know, a fully independent
or, not even a real country. Yeah, it's demilitarized.
So it's basically,
it's not a real country.
Like everything you are offering, and in exchange we will always, like, you know, either because of their political situation in Israel, like, we were always faced by rejections. There were just few leaders in Israel who had the courage to come out and to say that this is the only solution. This is the only way forward. But
so just a few leaders in Israel were dumb enough to think that giving Gaza and in the West Bank their own Palestinian state would somehow make the violence go away. Clearly, they haven't read Hamas's doctrine. They haven't read the 2017 charter, or he has, and he just chooses not to talk about it. So very, very interesting concept there that he's pushing a two-state solution. And again, we go back to the FARA paperwork of why, oh, why would they need to register under FARA? One, that the agency relationship exists. We know that. And then the other is the person or entity engages in activities intended to influence U.S. public opinion, policy, or government officials on behalf of the foreign principle. Those are the two reasons why they would end up having to do that. Thanks for the truth, Matt. Always keeping it 100. You better believe it. Incog Faraday coming in, gifting out 5 Speak the Truth memberships. And Sergeant says, why is there a tablecloth on his head? Oh, buddy, we're not even going to talk about the Hajj and all that other stuff. That's just a long freaking... That's a long freaking, I don't know, discussion. Redacted. Matt, thank you for standing for Israel. Love you, man. It's not standing for Israel. It's standing for the truth and anti-radical Islam, just to be perfectly clear.
In the last few years, we didn't see any of them.
Do you think Donald Trump can force a Palestinian state?
I think, you know, look, President Trump, he's a great deal maker. He's a great businessman. He's very successful. He brokered many deals around the world during the first administration. And I believe if we will have peace one day, this is the best opportunity for us with someone like President Trump.
Is Qatar at net zero? I know there was some enthusiasm about making sure you got to net zero.
Oh, yeah, net zero. Yeah, we really got to look at that. How about this? How about we go, like, now we go back. Why does corporate media hate Qatar? Gee, I wonder. You're pushing a two-state solution for a radical, radical jihadist freaking claim. Now, let's listen to what they say. Oh, dear God. Freaking ads, man. Of course, I've got ads on mine. We're going to listen to what they have to say about Hamas's Qatar office.
Of the criticism and the confusion from Americans. Well, there are two causes. One, you have a Hamas office here.
Mm-hmm. Of course I do.
Hamas has been designated, I think, repeatedly by the U.S. government, certainly by the Congress, as a terror organization. And people say, well, how could you have a
it's
Hamas
It's in black and white.
Here? What is that?
We have to go back to the root of this office. Like, why it's here in the first place? And Hamas office, when it was opened here in the first place, it was opened with full transparency and full consultation and actually even request from the U.S. And
the U.S. asked you to put a Hamas office here?
They are actually. They have asked us to open the channels with them and to have an established communication channel with the same case what was applied to Taliban as well. And look, at the end of the day, if you have a presence of someone in your country and you are engaging and talking, it doesn't mean that you are endorsing his ideas.
I'm just going to throw this out there. According to records, it looks like the Hamas Political Bureau was actually established in 2012. Who wants to guess who the president of the United States was back then? Smokey Sargent says Tucker is a member of the Fabian Society and Joe Saunders. Hasn't a two-state solution been tossed around since Yasser Arafat and the PLO days? Just saying. Yeah, you know, surprisingly, it has been tossed around for that long. And magically, and we're going to touch on that in a little bit. You know what? Like, since you brought that up, you know, I do have a tiny little clip on Yasser Arafat in a two-state solution being presented, brought to you by William Clinton.
And the only time Yasser Arafat didn't tell me the truth was when he promised me he was going to accept the peace deal that we had worked out, which would have given the Palestinians a state on 96% of the West Bank and 4% of Israel. And they got to choose where the 4% of Israel, including, I will say it again, a capital in East Jerusalem and two of the four quadrants of the old city of Jerusalem, confirmed by the Israeli Prime Minister, Ehud Barak, and they said no. And I think part of it is that Hamas did not care about a homeland for the Palestinians. They wanted to kill Israelis and make Israel uninhabitable.
Weird. They wanted to kill Israelis, and again, they didn't accept a two-state solution. So how many times was that actually tried in history that nobody even knows about? Nobody even knows about. It was tried numerous times to give it to them. Hell, we could go all the way back to the inception of Israel, prior to the inception of Israel, to the 1947 partition plan, and still they refused to accept it. Now, keeping in mind what I just told you, that that office was opened underneath Obama all the way back in 2012. And so if he's stating that the U.S. requested it, well, who in the U.S. requested it? That's a very, very good question.
It doesn't mean that you are supporting him. The purpose of this office was to facilitate peace, to stabilize the region, and to make sure that always it's serving the purpose. And you can go through even everything that all the events that happened in the recent 10 years since the office was officially opened here in Doha. How many peace deals been brokered from that office through that channel? Many of them. 2014 was the discussion and the negotiations was initiated here and ended in Egypt. In 2018, 2020 and 21, with all those escalations and many of escalations that we avoided to prevent a war. There are many, plenty of them. You will lose count. Then, after 7th of October, the first hostage deal that released the hostages, the women and children, was 109, and the foreigners, was 109 hostages. November 23 happened through that office. Second hostage deal, which we are going through right now, it was produced out of this office. So the office is a communication channel, and it doesn't...
Yeah, here's the thing, boss, is that nobody should be negotiating with Hamas. I don't give a crap if they have one hostage, 500 or 5,000. Nobody should be facilitating them. Nobody, not a single freaking person on this planet should be like communicating with Hamas whatsoever. Oh, it's so freaking frustrating. Don't worry, we're going to keep going. Redacted says, well, thanks for standing for the truth. And the truth is radical Islam that wants to wipe Israel out. I know who's going to win in the end. Yeah, and to be clear, like I am not like even, you know, sworn to the United States. It is the Constitution of the United States, right? Like I believe in the U.S. Constitution. I believe in our allies. I believe in all of those things as long as I remain loyal to the Constitution and they remain directly in line with U.S. interests. And I do believe that Israel lies directly in line with U.S. interests in the Middle East. I had a very long conversation about that last night, as a matter of fact, and it is absolutely true. And that's not the point of tonight's conversation, but we can get there one day.
Make me, you know, feeling shy that I speak with someone whom I have a disagreement with. President Trump spoke with North Korea. He didn't shy out of him. He met with him. He engaged with him. He wants to put an end for the conflict. He wants to make a deal with him. He's a deal maker. And this country basically is brokering deals.
Initially at the request of the U.S. government.
Yes.
So you're brokering deals for Hamas. And he says initially at the request of the U.S. government, but to be clear, it was the U.S. government underneath former President Obama.
And it continued like everything that we...
Barack Hussein Obama.
Did look, Tucker, but I'm confident that throughout the years that I've been working under the leadership of the Emir.
Hey, it's Adam with Vantage.
Oh, God, dude. This is why I can't do freaking YouTube very much anymore, man. It's absolute BS, dude. And I, like, personally, I look at it and I say, okay, so Tucker Carlson, his name does appear on the FAR paperwork. He did, in fact, like ended up appearing on that. Obviously, Qatar was paying out, I think it was $180K a month to that LLC here in the United States of America in order to go out and convince Tucker Carlson to work his way over to Qatar to speak with him. And again, the main reasons is one, that they ended up hiring a PR firm, but the other reason that it could be is because they're attempting, like Qatar itself is attempting to affect U.S. politics, right? To shape the view on how you view everything over inside of the Middle East. And again, you know, you're originally talking about a 10% reach out to conservative networks until all of a sudden the conservatives ended up losing. And then as soon as the conservatives ended up making it out, well, great. You know, like now we're gonna go over there. Now let's hear what he's got to say about Iran.
Country is that you're too close to Iran. And I should say you're very physically close to Iran.
Yeah, we are physically close.
How close?
It's around 120 miles away.
Right across the water.
Yeah. It's just, you know, you can have a boat ride in 90 minutes, you are there.
So how would you describe your relationship with Iran? And why do you think you're being criticized for it?
Look, it's, you know, Iran has a lot of problems with the West.
No
way.
We
understand that. We acknowledge that. They have problems with the region, with countries in the region, yes. At the end of the day, Iran is, you know, our next door neighbor. And we have to maintain a good relation with all our neighbors. We have a lot of things in common when it comes to the gas field, the largest gas field in the world. It's partnership between.
Because we have to have a good relationship with all of our neighbors. No, the hell you don't. No, you don't. No, the hell you do not. You do not have to have a good relationship with Iran. They are the main driving factor behind everybody that is attacking Israel present day. They are the main driving factor to everybody in the Middle East that is going against U.S. policy over there. To state that you have to have a good relationship with them as they go to seek nuclear weapons is the largest, like, load of, like, it's the largest, crap that I've ever heard. And so now it becomes more and more and more readily apparent. It's a lot more fun to go back and listen to this, knowing how it was registered, why it was registered, how he ended up getting there, and all of that other crap.
Us and Iran, it's half, 2/3 of it in the Qatari territory, and 1/3 is in the Iranian territory.
This is in the Gulf, this is undersea.
Yeah, this is the one in the Gulf Sea. You have, I have to coordinate on environmental issues, like, for example, the water contaminations. I have to coordinate on security issues, like smuggling. I have to have this relationship, this working relationship with Iran. But also, when you think about it from a bigger perspective, it's for the interest of the region to have a better relation for everyone in the region with Iran. And
because it's within their best interest to have a good relationship with Iran. Dude, suck it. Seriously, suck it. It's not. It's in your best interest as long as you can keep playing both sides of the table. It's in your best interest to push a two-state solution. It's in your best interest to be buddies with Iran to get more money pumped into your country. That's what's in your best interest. That's what's in your country's best interest. That is not within the United States' best interest. And we do not have to sit here and pretend like it is, because it absolutely is not. Do you know why? Because that same money that's going back and forth, that's helping out Qatar, guess where else it's going to flow back across the border over into Iran? And guess what they put that money into? They put that money into their terror networks. They put that money into their nuclear weapons program. They put that money into destabilizing the Middle East. They put that money into, no BS, which I ended up just showing the other day, conducting terror attacks here in the United States of America, that the FBI had to go in and intervene and make sure it didn't happen. And so why, oh, why would we actually listen to this garbage? Why? Because we have a U.S. airbase over inside of Qatar? Are you kidding me? That's freaking insane. Suck it, dude. Absolutely freaking nuts. And now that we have the entirety of the freaking story of how that actually came to be, now it makes sense. Well, bad news for him, because this just dropped today over inside of Gaza. You know what those are? Those are leaflets being dropped over inside of Gaza City. Joe Saunders says Iran's government has a problem with neighbors. The people? Meh, not so much. Just saying. Yeah, it is the Iranian government. I will agree with you on that, that you have the Iranian regime, and there's a lot of people over inside of Iran that are trying to stand up and rise up against the regime. But the same problem I have with the people inside of Iran is the same problem I have with the people who refused to stand up with the Taliban when the time came and actually take control of their dang country. And quite frankly, they just don't do it. Period. They won't do it. They haven't done it. And I understand what I'm saying, and I understand what they're up against, but it's also getting to be like just a freaking sounding board. It's not everybody. Okay, great. Well, I understand it's not everybody, but at the same freaking time, eventually you have to do something. And they have gotten so in depth to the point over inside of Iran that they've allowed the regime to basically control everything and everyone to the point where nobody wants to do anything. It's freaking sad. Absolutely sad. And so, yes, I agree with you there. But at the same time, dude, what the hell are they doing? Like, have they? Have they done anything? I don't know. Here's some more leaflets being dropped over inside of Gaza City. Yeah, buddy. Yeah, buddy. You know what those leaflets say? Get the hell out of Dodge. That's exactly what those leaflets are telling them. Get the hell out of Gaza City. Go away. Move your happy butts down to the south. This whole area is going to be like a war zone very, very soon. And they just dropped those. Now, historically, when we've seen these dropped, you can expect within about 72 hours to see a major assault. Now, I've seen some people claiming, all right, that Israel has already moved in. But just because they're claiming it doesn't mean that it's necessarily true. Thumper 33 coming in, gifting out a Speak the Truth membership. Thank you. We do know that the IDF has been operating over inside of Gaza City recently, but Israel, and their operations inside Gaza City have been very limited. We've seen a couple different airstrikes against key Hamas infrastructure inside of Gaza, and I'm going to go over that here in just a second. But as far as people getting out of there, they're giving them the opportunity to leave, and they're actually leaving. So for everybody, you know, because there was a lot of rumors, and I even ended up reporting on it, that is being reported that Hamas is not allowing people to leave Gaza City, that they're holding them inside and they're not allowing them to go anywhere. Well, now they're being allowed to leave. You guys can see right here, these are all people packing up and getting the heck out of Dodge, because war is coming very, very soon to a location near them. Now, there was an airstrike that ended up occurring earlier over inside of Gaza, and we will touch on that here in just a little bit. Here you can see what I believe is the base of one of those structures, and we can go over some of the issues that ended up coming out of this, of people grabbing dudes and carrying them out, running, whatever, man. Boom confetti? Dude, well, I'll show you some good boom confetti. I got boom confetti coming up here in just a little bit. But yeah, it's saying that Israel controls about 40% of Gaza City so far. These are the latest numbers, that Israel is currently in control of about 40% of Gaza City, and they're on their way to take care of it. We'll see what ends up happening. Why can't we allow these people to come in? You know what? I'm going to save that one here till the end, because it's a really good clip that I want you guys in order to hear. Oddly enough, this ended up coming out, what was it? Earlier today or yesterday, I forget which one, Trump talking about negotiations with Hamas still.
Mr. President, do you have an update on the negotiations to release the rest of the hostages in Gaza?
We're in very deep negotiation with Hamas. We said, let them all out right now, let them all out, and much better things will happen for them. But if you don't let them all out, it's going to be a tough situation. It's going to be nasty. That's my opinion. Israel's choice, but that's my opinion. They got to let them out. You got 20 plus, you have about 38 dead people, young, beautiful, dead people. And I'll tell you, the parents want them every bit as much, almost more, than as if their son or daughter were alive. But you have many dead people that are coming out as part of the deal. It's 20 people, but I think of the 20, there could be some that have recently died, is what I'm hearing. I hope that's wrong, but you have over 30 bodies in this negotiation. Can you believe? I mean, we negotiate for people that are living here. We know that at least 30 people are dead, and we're negotiating to get them out. The parents want them back so badly, as if they were alive. Every bit as much. It's really pretty amazing. It's very sad. I'm in the middle of it. And I put out the other day, I said, we want all 20. We don't want two. You know, I was the one with myself and my people, Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner was great on this. But they got a lot of people out. We got almost all of them out. They're down to 20. But Adam, we got like a tremendous number.
He just keeps going, man. At the end of the day, he ends up saying, like, Hamas, you need to end up releasing these people, or it's going to turn out very, very bad for you. And that's true. And I will say that, you know, here I'm taking off in the very near future to head up over to Israel. You guys are figuring out when. And that one of the things that I am going to be doing is meeting up with families of hostages. And I look very, very much look forward to speaking with them. And listening to what they have to say, what it is that they've gone through and the different things that they have actually heard about their family members and about what's going on with them. Hopefully I get some of them to agree to some interviews and we're able to do that for you guys as you know, I'm over there and we're doing that. So here's the very interesting thing. Obviously here we can see like the humanitarian area that's set up, but this map here that's set up in the south, there's a lot of people that are saying, oh, everybody's starving. It's a horrible place for them and so on and so forth, right? As we look at it, I studied the hell out of this thing. It was actually really interesting what I ended up noting down over here. You guys can see it. It kind of looks like a tent. It says field hospital. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 field hospitals. 8 field hospitals, just from what I can see on this map. Weird. I got the hiccups.
In addition, there is a brand new water pipeline that ended up getting cut in from the Sinai Peninsula, and another one that's being pushed right up over here. And you guys can actually see where these pipelines are going in to be able to provide the water. Obviously, aid distribution sites are up and located on this thing. There is one right up all the way over here in the north. There's additional four that are located down here in the south. Obviously, we also have humanitarian aid crossing points and all of that other crap. So all of that exists, and all of that, like humanitarian aid, all of that, and like it's all being pumped in there, and people are doing their absolute best to help these people out. But the problem is that you have a vast majority of this population, a very, very good chunk of them, that absolutely want to do nothing but kill in order to take over the Israeli society. So Israeli issues evacuation order, tells Palestinians to flee as it targets Gaza City high rises. This ended up getting put out by World News. And I was, you know, somebody had asked me earlier today whether or not there's information that actually exists by any media source on whether or not Israel is providing updated or any warnings whatsoever before they end up bombing these buildings. And we at least got a little bit of insight here coming out of this article. It says the warning went out to residents of a 15-story tower and the adjacent encampments on social media at 1 p.m. local time. The Defense Army will attack the building soon due to the presence of Hamas terrorist infrastructure inside or near it. That's what they ended up putting out there and blasting out. For your safety, you are required to evacuate the building immediately southward towards a humanitarian zone in Mawasi Khan Yunis. About 40 minutes later, the operation was complete. Defense Minister Katz later posted a video of the building toppled in seconds, along with the words, "We continue." So what exactly does that look like, and where did it go? Well, this is the building that actually just ended up getting targeted today. And importantly, I want you guys to be able to notice the radio tower that's sitting here on top of this building. And I also want you to notice that it's not like there is a buttload of houses over and around here. Greta's fine. Don't worry. We can talk about the Freedom Flotilla in a minute if you want. But you guys can see the amount of buildings and structures and things like that that are around there. Now, what did this look like? How do we know they warned them? I've said numerous times that when you get, you know, these building collapses from multiple different angles, that is what we call a clue that Israel ended up warning them in advance, because you have cameras that are fixated and waiting on those buildings. They said 40 minutes. I wouldn't be surprised if it was an hour, you know, like they gave them an hour to evacuate. But either way, here's the strike. Did y'all see that? I hope you all saw that. Look at this guy. Dude was just like, I got to get my 30 seconds of fame in. I got to get my 5 seconds of fame. Yeah, that's one hell of an antenna that ended up going down, right? Yeah, and it's also funny, like here at the end of this video, you can actually see the dude like, oh, it exploded. Better take a photograph and get one for the gram right there. Like he's probably off camera, like selfie, hashtag trapped in Gaza. Now, it's funny, these people knowing that Israel is going to be coming into the area have yet to evacuate. They are staying there. They are choosing to stay there. They might have evacuated those main structures, but look at the amount of people that are actually walking around on the ground out there. You can actually see a couple of them scattering down below, and then you have these other gentlemen that are just standing up there waiting to film it. Another angle of the blast ended up getting captured, the airstrike. Anybody else notice how a lot of these guys are just smiling? Like this guy right here and the one just to his left in particular, just smiling as all this is going down, because they're like, yay, we capture our propaganda. Like we managed to get that crap captured on scene. Now, do you guys remember this gentleman?
The guy that like called his parents just to celebrate and say that he had killed 10 Israelis, 10 Jews with his bare hands, that he got him and he killed him and he was super proud. He's dead. He's finally dead. The guy that called his parents to brag that he killed 10 Israelis with his bare hands. Yep. They finally freaking got him. Now, I warned you guys about like different propaganda and things like that that would be coming out of Gaza, and I wasn't lying to you about that. I want you guys to take a look at this video right here that I'm about to be playing for you. This video within itself is probably one of the worst cases of propaganda. And like I said, I'm seeing a lot of horrible propaganda.
ولاد صغار يا الله اطلاق نار علينا في شهداء في السياره دبابك يا كناثي دخلتها بطريق نسحب تقدرين نكمل اطلاق علينا بشكل مباشر من اليات الاحتلال بعد استهداف بس في مواطنين
the horror. Oh, the Israeli tank, it shot the van and it killed a bunch of kids. We almost jump in our ambulance and get out of here. We had it turned on. Now, here's something interesting. Number one, this next image that I'm going to end up showing you guys is from this opening scene right here. Okay. And it's very important that you guys are aware that that's exactly what I'm about to show you. Because in that opening scene, this image appears. I'm going to blow it up nice and big on your screen. You guys can see right here, there's no burn marks that appear on the ground in the opening scene of that image. And this guy is just chilling, standing right out there overside it. But look right here on the ground inside that yellow circle. You guys see how there's no burn marks on the ground? Also note that right here, there is zero tire tracks. And again, this was the opening scene of the video. Now, magically, later on, what we end up seeing is this. Here in the video, we end up seeing this big black streak located here on the ground that leads directly up to that van. And we happen to see tire tracks that back right up to where this big black streak is located. I'll say that again. You have tire tracks later on in the video that back directly up to where this big black streak is located. What does that mean? That means that likely somebody backed a vehicle up, probably the ambulance that you see in this one, pulled out a can of frickin' fuel and dumped it all over that van. And then ended up torching the sucker. And before they made sure to leave a trail of fuel on the ground. You guys see that, right? How it leads directly up to the van and then back here to this one spot, like right where the tire tracks end up ending. You guys see that, right? Like, I'm not the only one that was able to see that freaking crap. Like, please tell me that I'm not the only one that was able to see that. It's absolutely preposterous that even exists in this world. But then it gets worse. When you go up and you actually examine a picture of what's here, you can see that the sliding door on the van is still perfectly intact. And there's absolutely zero sign whatsoever that a freaking tank shot this thing. Not one tiny shred of evidence that a tank shot this thing. The rear sliding door is attached. So I want you to picture this. If this van was in transit and there was people inside, i.e. children that were inside of this vehicle, that door would have likely been closed. And when it gets all heated up in the manner in which they show here in this video, all of that plastic from the freaking handle, all of the metal, the plastic would melt, the metal would expand, so on and so forth. That door is lodged shut. This is why firefighters carry those things called the jaws of life, because you need them in these circumstances. Also, notably, over behind the vehicle, guess what? None of the ground is freaking disturbed. None whatsoever. And when we look at the front of the vehicle, because thank God the cameraman zoomed in on it, guess what? There's no bodies in the front of the vehicle either. But you know what there is? There's freaking seats. There is seats in the front of the vehicle. There's still a little bit of fuel that's on fire down there. Same thing in the back. You can see how there's fuel on fire. Picture somebody going in the back and you know, right down, happens to be right up in the middle. It all welds together. Nailed it. Ruh-roh. Yeah. Now notice how there's no seats in there. It's almost like people took that van because it's been sitting out there for so long and looted it. And then these jack wagons ended up showing up, lighting it on fire and shooting a freaking video. Now, the crazy thing is maybe they lit it on fire once and were like, there's no fire left in the vehicle when we run up there. We have to go back and douse it with more fuel in order to make that happen. Thus, we end up getting those freaking burn marks and tire tracks that never existed in the very opening scene of this entire freaking staged video. There is zero fuel trail on the ground, zero anything on the ground whatsoever. None of it. Why do I love those things so much? This drives me insane. It drives me insane to the point because this was passed around as absolute proof and evidence that the IDF ended up trashing this freaking van and that they ended up destroying it. Absolute freaking garbage. Now, here's something that's not garbage, is the IDF actually using a freaking APC filled with explosives to take out a houseborn IED. So that's cool. They end up using an APC to take out a houseborn IED. That's really cool. Like, you gotta really appreciate that. Now, how odd is it that there's other people that are hanging out right over inside of that area that clearly looks like a Hamas stronghold, and you can tell because of the amount of destruction that's taking place over there, that's able to also capture that same detonation, or at least claim that it's the same detonation is what they're putting out. Oh, the Freedom Flotilla. I know you guys love freaking Greta Thunberg.
We created a flotilla, left Barcelona, and then we're going to go down here. More boats and more people are waiting in Tunis, and then Sicily is going to come, and then we'll have the whole flotilla. We're going to travel close to countries and then into Gaza to break the illegal Israeli siege.
Could you just talk us through a little bit where you were intercepted on this map, and talk the viewers through what happened when you were intercepted and what we fear we might be able to expect this time?
Every time we were intercepted, we were only one boat. This time we are a fleet, you know?
Yeah.
So the possibility of us breaking the siege is very, very high. With
this nut job actually thinks that they're going to break the siege. And if you do, what the heck do you think is actually going to happen? What do you think is going to happen? What do you think the outcome of you breaking the freaking siege would be? Kyle Cox says, Matt, I haven't seen the IDF use any one-way FPV like Ukraine uses. Do you think they would benefit more from using instead of airstrikes? No, honestly, because I think they need much larger munitions. And I have seen two-way drones being used over there, but not the one-way drones being used over there. And the one-way drones, the two-way drones that I've seen them using are dropping munitions over on targets. I've also actually seen, believe it or not, Hamas using those inside of there as well. Now, the reason I don't think those would be very effective is because most of the strikes that they do require larger amounts of ammunition, like, period. Like, most of the strikes that they do require larger amounts of ammunition. Additionally, if it was just like targeting individuals, yes, those one-way FPVs would be like very, very freaking good. Do I think that they should use them? Yeah, I do. Do I think that they have better things to spend their time on right now versus acquiring those one-way FPVs? Yeah, absolutely. But let me give you a situation where one of those one-way FPVs would come in handy. Clearly we likely know where these different locations are. This is Hamas. I think Greta wants to be a hostage. This is Hamas. This is Hamas enforcing their version of Sharia, breaking a man's legs in order to instill fear within the civilian population. The bill of my hat's crooked. Great. I love it, man. Dude, I'll crooked that sucker up even more. This is Hamas instilling fear. I saw somebody say, ouch. Yeah, no kidding. This is what's currently taking place. Now, the crazy thing is, even though we know, oh, that made it worse, didn't it? How do I, the camera, man, it's backwards. How do I say this? This is why there's still people stuck in those areas. By the way, what did this man do? I know you guys are wondering what his alleged charges are. This man's alleged charges, from the best that I can find, this man's alleged charges are going in and getting humanitarian aid from one of the GHF distro sites. Oh man, I left those on. Son of a biscuit. Dude, normally I'm really good about turning those off. I see somebody telling me that I left the ads on. You know, I've been doing a lot better lately about freaking turning those off. I'm really sorry that those are on, man. I do my best. There is a default setting that I have to figure out, but I try to keep those off for the streams themselves. I've been doing better about it, man. I've been doing a heck of a lot better. I try, you know, I absolutely try. Sorry about that. They should be turned off for you guys now. I wish I would have seen that earlier. Those should be gone now. So apologize for that. I always like to keep you guys ad-free over here in the stream, something that I've been trying to do lately. And I will be giving you guys some live streams and stuff while I'm over there to continue to give you guys like some updates for everything that I have going on, because the way forward is definitely one of those things that we want to pay attention to. Now, I want to leave you guys with this. I have been talking a lot lately about Islam over here in the United States of America and what exactly that means and what it is that these people are pushing. And I want to give you guys an idea of what type of stuff is being pushed.
هو ضرب يقصد به تنبيه المرأة إلى أن حياة الأسرة في خطر. تنبيه المرأة على أن علاقاتنا الزوجية مهددة. فانتبهي حتى لا تتعرض هذه الأسرة للهدم وللدمار حتى لا يتأثر أولادنا ولا يتأثر مستقبلنا.
The beatings should be symbolic.
ضرب رمزي وإذا كان ضرب حقيقي له شروط ومواصفات يعني بدءا من المقصود. المقصود ليس الانتقام وليس.
It shouldn't be for revenge or to cause injury.
إذا.
إذن هناك دكتور زياد ضوابط لهذا.
نعم.
She's literally smiling as she asks him these questions. Just throwing that one out there.
أولا أن يكون مقصودك الإصلاح والحفاظ على هذه الحياة. ثانيا إذا ضربت فتجنب مواطن الإيذاء الوجه والمقاتل وكذا. وأن يكون ضربا ليس ضربا مبرحا اللي هو يعني ليس ضرب انتقام. أنت هذه زوجتك.
We're talking about your wife here. Come on, man. Don't hit her in the face. Don't punch her in the boob. Don't kick her in the crotch. This is your wife we're talking about. Come on, guys.
كما يقال ينبغي يعني سمعنا كلنا بنسمع في المثل ضرب الحبيب زبيب. ينبغي أن يكون ضرب الزوج لزوجته إذا وقع هو ضرب الحبيب لحبيبته. تصور معي كيف يكون ضرب المحب ضرب الأب لابنه ضرب الأم لابنتها عندما تخطئ ضربا علاجيا.
It's a therapeutic beating rather than a vindictive one.
وليس ضربا انتقاميا بهدف الإصلاح وبهدف تنبيه الزوجة في حالة يعني خطئها وفي حالة عدم استجابتها للموعظة وللهجر وكما يقولون.
And to the husband forsaking her in bed, beating should be the last resort. Go rape that chick first, man. Like, just have at it. But beating is the absolute last resort. And the most screwed up part of this entire freaking video is this woman that's just sitting there like, yep, yep, yep.
آخر العلاج الكي ولذلك أقول هذه آية الحفاظ على الحياة الزوجية آية الحفاظ على الأسرة.
Oh, you guys think that's bad. You guys think that's bad. You know, I ended up sharing something last night and I think, you know what, while I'm on this whole spiel tonight, I might as well go ahead and throw something out there at you. And I'm trying to remember who it was that originally ended up putting this up there, but I couldn't help myself, and I died laughing so hard at this video, and I hope you guys do too.
The men of Al-Zut transfer their virility and manliness into Muhammad? Let's find out by reading a now infamous hadith from Musnad Ahmed. Abdullah ibn Mas'ud related, "The Messenger of Allah sent for me, so we set out until I reached such and such a place. And he traced a line for me and told me, 'Stay between the two edges of this. Don't go outside of it. If you go outside of it, it's over for you.'" Muhammad knew that Abdullah wasn't man enough to endure the men of Al-Zut. Abdullah said, "And so I stayed there." Then the Messenger of Allah went off a stone's throw away, or a little farther, or something like that. Then he, Abdullah, mentioned a group of male members, Hanin, i.e. men, who looked like Zut people. Affan narrated, or something like what Affan said, Allah willing, "They didn't have any clothes on." You don't say. "And I didn't see their genitals, and they were tall and scrawny." He, Abdullah, said, "And they came and started to ride the Messenger of Allah, and the Prophet of Allah began to recite to them. And they started to move closer and lean around me and get in my way, and I became intensely terrified of them."
It's so not I done.
Sat down, or something like that. He sat down, thus protecting the part of him they were after. "And when the morning light broke, they began to go away," or something like that. "Then the Messenger of Allah came back exhausted and in pain, I'll bet, or practically in pain, from how they had ridden him. He said, 'Indeed, I am exhausted,' or something like that. Then the Messenger of Allah put his head in my lap," or something like that. "And the men came with tall white garments on, but the Messenger of Allah had fallen asleep. And I became more intensely terrified of them than I was the first time. The men of Al-Zut rode Muhammad all night long. From then on, his followers could boast that he was given the strength of 30 men. 30 men of Al-Zut gathered in the desert and injected their masculinity into the Prophet of Islam, making him the most powerful man in the world. Of course, the effects might wear off after a while. Sometimes Muhammad would need to top off the tank, so to speak. That's when his companion Diha al-Kalbi would come to the rescue. As Muhammad's companion Hudhaifa said, the people used to enter upon the Prophet whenever they wanted. The Prophet then prohibited them from entering upon him while he was in meeting with Diha al-Kalbi. Muhammad didn't want anyone disturbing him when he was in one of his private meetings with Diha al-Kalbi, who, by the way, was the hottest young stud in all of Arabia. Hudhaifa continues, "One day I came to the Prophet for some matter, hoping to meet him alone. When I arrived at the door, I looked and found a curtain covering the door. I raised it and was about to enter. That's what we are accustomed to do. Then I saw Diha sitting beside the Prophet, who was sleeping, and his head was on the lap of Diha. When I saw that, I left." What did Muhammad do after his rough night with the men of Al-Zut? He put his head on Abdullah's lap and passed out. What did he do after a meeting with Diha al-Kalbi? He put his head on Diha's lap and passed out. Later, Muhammad told his followers that when they see him with Diha al-Kalbi, it's actually the angel Gabriel. Sure, it's the angel Gabriel, conveniently disguised as Diha al-Kalbi. And Diha was always sure to leave his calling card. Sahih al-Bukhari, 232. Narrated Aisha, "I used to wash the semen off the clothes of the Prophet, and even then I used to notice one or more spots on them." Aisha would wash the semen off his clothes. She would scratch it from his garment. She would scrape it off with her hand. Small price to pay for having such a manly husband, though. Am I right? So, we finally understand how Muhammad got the strength of 30 men. He told an elite squad of 30 men of Al-Zut, known for their large penises, to meet him in the desert. He told his companion, Abdullah, to watch and learn from behind the Diddy line. He walked about a stone's throw away and assumed the position. Then the Al-Zut showed up and said, "It's Zutin time," and zooted all over him all night long.
I've watched that video probably 30 or 40 times, and it gets funnier every time. Like, it doesn't stop getting funny. Like, I literally can't stop laughing. Whew. Oh my goodness. Whew. I gotta have a sign off here. I'm sorry, man. I read your comment earlier, and you are always welcome for me answering your questions. I will always do the best to my ability. I am not going to be playing, as much as I want to be playing that song, I'm not going to be playing it tonight. Instead, you're going to get the typical sign off music. Please remember to like and subscribe to the channel. Peace, love, happiness. God bless. Not to Allah, but to the one and true God, Jesus Christ. I'm out of here.